House of Brothers is about three adult brothers living in their father's home, mm-hmm. and truths about past affairs are revealed mm-hmm. as Absolutely. Tensions rise.
Yes.
Please introduce us to the father figure in the play.
The father has a past. I don't really think it's a terrible past, but his sons have, they're three mothers. I thought about Bonanza, you know, I came up.
I remember
And you've got
Bonanza.
The three sons and they've yes. got three different mothers.
Yes.
Well, that's it's very similar to that. But the mothers in their lives impact the relationship that they have with the father because it was stormy weather. And when those are revealed and how the timing and all of that, it brings out some type of seedy type relationships because now the father is an upstanding deacon in a church. He's given up those ways. Mm-hmm. But the sons, like the oldest son that he did not raise, has an anger issue. He has come back having lost his home, and now he has no place to go but his father's house. The middle son, Jonathan here, who's mm-hmm. named after his father, Rufus Birdsong Jr., wants a singing career, but he just barely manages to get a couple of gigs every now and then.
Well, tell us a little bit more about your character, Jonathan.
Well, Rufus Jr. is he's complicated. I think he's like most musicians that are struggling to make it. There are severe ups and severe downs, and he is in need of what he feels should be his father's support. Even though his father does support him to a degree, he does not feel like he's getting the same support from his father that he would from his mother, who was also an artist, a singer. So he finds himself in constant conflict with his father's idea of tradition as far as manhood and as far as employment. And that is in direct conflict with who he feels he should be as far as his career, his career goal.
Generational disconnect.
Absolutely.
Sharon, in the past you've written stories about well-known figures in history and in Atlanta
yes.
history, in particular the Herndons,
yes.
the Candlers. And your writing is deeply rooted in the African-American experience. What inspired the story of House of Brothers?
In House of Brothers, usually I write during the summer, and I'm always looking for some subject matter to exploit. But my sister was deathly ill, and while I would attend her, there were times that she just didn't want to talk. It was like that, and I was grieving, too, because I knew I was losing her. And so I would bring my computer, and I decided, let me just write. And writing has always been a way of easing, and it's easing that type of pain for me. And I sat there in a week's time, and I wrote this House of Brothers. And I also thought about my own brother, who had this same disconnect with his father. Our father was from the old school, so to speak, or a generation that believed that a man should work, a woman should stay at home and take care of her children. And this is what you do. It's not about your relationship directly or personally with your son or your children. You just provide a house, clothing, and food. And my brother was always at odds with my father and vice versa. And I thought I would kind of put that into the story as well. And I think you do that. I think Jonathan does a good job with being that son.
Thank you.
So you mind your own family's experience somewhat.
Yes, I do. I write about what I know or what I have researched. That's important to me.
You premiered your first opera in 2000.
Yes, yes.
House of Brothers is one of your many works of straight theater.
Yes.
What made you decide to go it alone and found your own company?
Hmm. The shortest answer is Scott Joplin. I have always loved and studied African-American history. I mean, that is the the divide that I came with. Atlanta was just desegregating when I came up, but I didn't understand that because I wasn't around that. So if you're used to being around a certain thing, that's what you experience. You don't know you're poor until you see how rich people live. You don't know you're segregated until you see the rest of the world. But in studying Scott Joplin wrote two operas. One has been lost, but the Tremonitia is what we remember. And his heart was broken.
Literally.
He never saw that opera come to fruition on the stage. And when he finally did get a chance to hear it, they were inexperienced singers who could barely read, and you're trying to get the message across, and they don't deliver this. No one's going to do that work. Scott Joplin, 1917. Then I decide when I wrote this opera, it was actually a birthday bash for me. Most people want to have a wine dip or party with your friends. For me, being an opera singer, pianist, storyteller, a church musician, all of that culminated into an opera for my 50th birthday. And that was the only thing that I was going to do, was just that one opera. And then I thought, well, I've got to get people together to sing it. I'm not going to knock on anybody's door to ask them would they do this for me. And I was just surprised at all of the singers wanting an opportunity to be on the stage to show their training. Mm-hmm. And that's how I began, because once the opera singer ended, they asked me, well, when's the next opera? I didn't have another opera. What do you mean the next opera? And I went to the Herndon home to do excerpts from this opera. And the spirit of the Herndons just was in that house. I mean, if you ever go there, you feel like they are still there. And I saw the frieze on the wall that told their story. And I got in my car, and it was the most foolish thing that I've done. I was in my car, had pieces of paper and pencil, trying to write down the libretto. I could see it, I could feel it, and zigzagging in the street. And something said, "Stop! Wait till you get home and finish the libretto." And when I got home at 5 o'clock, I wrote from 5 until midnight. I was just on fire with that story, and then it just kept leading from one story to another.
I was in college the first time I heard Joshua Rifkin's nonsuch LP of the Joplin Rags. Mm-hmm. And I thought, where has this music been all my life?
How about that?
To hear that Joplin was your inspiration for
Absolutely.
The opera, for your first opera, is very moving. I'm glad yours didn't break your heart and end your life
No.
the way his did.
Absolutely not.
Oh. Well, in gaining entry to the opera world, Sharon, you got some pushback, not only from the classical world, but from the Black community as well. How have you come to deal with some of those attitudes from others?
I experienced that in college, actually, and in my church, first of all, because we had a young people's choir that sang gospel music, and we had an anthem choir, and the young people called the anthem choir the old fogies. And
even though you were the same age.
To keep the peace in my church and with the my own colleagues or people my own age, I sang in the gospel choir, but I was singing an octave higher than everyone else. But I was most comfortable in the anthem choir. But of course, in high school, I had a great teacher, Mr. William Revere, and he taught us how to sight read, and we sang all of the anthems, as they say, from Bach to Rock, of course. And you had to do it a cappella. He taught us, you get that pitch pipe, the tonic key, and that is it. And we were the best sight readers in the world. So part of my story of writing my first opera is called The Opera Singer, because it talks about the stories of especially African-American classically trained singers like Roland Hayes that had a very difficult time being accepted. And so Roland Hayes is in that. I do vignettes of Roland Hayes. And then I put the emphasis on Sissy Aretta Joyner Jones, known as the Black Patty. And, of course, they say she was verbally offered a contract to sing with the Met, And then some patrons said, if a black singer sings, we will withdraw all financial backing. And so she spent her life, 17 years or so, being a vaudevillist, doing vaudeville shows, but made an incredible amount of money. Vaudeville show, but she would set this opera or this particular act called the Operatic Kaleidoscope. And she could do the roles of Aida, Lakme, so you could tell what type of voice she had. Elaborate costumes, everything that went with that. And of course, she didn't want to be in the vaudeville show. You know, you got all these silly things, the dog and cat acts and the tight ropes and all that type of thing. But that was what was open to her. She had performed before presidents. She had gone before Queen Victoria. And when you get back to America, that was taken from her. So, yes, I told her story. And because I could tell her story, I could relate my own story. Not just because of what was happening so far as the racism and that type of attitude, but when you're in the city a lot of times, people don't have an appreciation. Oh, that's old fogey. Who does that? We don't understand that type of music. But this is the voice I was given. Mm-hmm. So, and you ask me about how do you kind of reconcile writing opera in your community and in the Afrocentric community. You write about their history. Write what is relevant. Mm. And so when I tell that story, even though I'm putting it in the format of a European opera, it's your story. That's the reconciliation piece for me.
So you've written 14 operas.
14, 12 premiered. I've got two yet still in the hopper.
And how many plays?
You know, I thought I had only written about seven, but I found that I had written 10 plays. nine plays, with the 10th play that I will write. I've actually started writing the framework of that play called Justice for Henry Peg Gilbert, who was the grandfather of my first cousin. He was not related to me, but her mother married my uncle. And this young man who lived in LaGrange, Georgia, was murdered by the sheriff in 1947. And they're doing all type of reconciliation programs now. They took his land after they accused him of harboring a convict or someone who had murdered someone. And that was just an excuse to take 111 acres of land, which was very unusual. He became a target because he was upstanding and because he was wealthy. And that just didn't set well. And so the man that was murdered, their family ended up with his land. It was auctioned off, and there was no reparation for that land. And then the wife was run out of town because they tried to arrest her. She was still grieving for her husband. And 30 days later, they arrest her for the same crime. And she came to Atlanta, and my aunt, through marriage, was telling me about it. First of all, they didn't speak about it. For 69 years, no one spoke of it. In fact, the citizens, black citizens in LaGrange, many of them wouldn't talk about it. Too painful and fearful.
Ugh.
Fearful. So I'm writing a play about that. So and it's not just about justice. I write about AIDS, homelessness in Atlanta, any type of subject that I think that's important. It's not just about entertainment for me. It's about education.
But what is it that distinguishes, for the stories you want to tell, what is it that distinguishes which medium, whether it is a play or an opera?
How much I want to say. Plays, you can get the message over much quickly than you can with an opera. You know, it's drawn out, and you have every emotion. You have to write a song about it. You know, the musicals are like that. You stop the drama so you can sing about it. and with the plays, there are times that the music gets in the way. I want to be able to talk about as many facts as I can, and that determines it for me.
Jonathan, would you talk about having the opportunity to tell these stories?
You know what? It's an honor and a privilege to bring someone's ideals to the stage, especially when it's someone that you admire and someone that tells stories that you can directly relate to. There's so few things that directly relate to me as an African American man, and to have someone like Dr. Willis writing things that speak to me, and have the opportunity to be a part of it is a wonderful thing. I wouldn't trade it for the world. Yeah.
My guest has been Dr. Sharon Willis, founder of AmeriColor Opera Alliance, and Jonathan Blanchard, singer, actor. The new play by Sharon Willis is House of Brothers. It opens at the Porter Sanford Performing Arts Center on May 21st.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.